Hello and welcome to Bad Music Hurts, the friendly music club podcast where my sibling and I discuss our favorite music. This is episode 22, and today we're talking about Philly native Vacationers' fifth LP, Cherish, from 2023. I'm Mark Bearclift, and on the other end is my brother and renowned Chomps aficionado, Michael Bearclift. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, there are a metric ton of Chomps in my soul. That's for sure.
You had told me something about the smoked ones being particularly troublesome.
Oh, they're amazing. They're so good. It's just not even fair. You know how like it's so easy to get into like a routine with food?
Mm-hmm.
My routine with food has increasingly become finish dinner, still have like somewhat of a sweet tooth. My cheat code is a peanut butter and jelly. And then I'm like, I'm still hungry. And then it's always a Chomps.
Oh, I was about to say, please tell me you don't chase your peanut butter and jelly after dinner with the Chomps.
No, oh yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, if the PB&J doesn't scratch the itch, I'll chase down a Chomps. It's like a cheat code for protein. It's great stuff.
I guess. I mean, you gotta build up that muscle from all that swimming.
Yeah. Got to make sure I don't hurt myself. So I'm gonna need nourishment.
Thank goodness Chomps aren't known to be expensive or anything.
Yeah, that's. I just don't even look at the total when I go grocery shopping. It's just like, okay, well, here we go. All right.
And 10% of my salary goes to Chomps. Yes. There we go. Just setting that right aside.
Yeah, right.
You do what you need to survive.
Yeah. Eric, forgive me for my sins.
Oh, gosh. Well, I am excited to talk about Cherish. And honestly, I was a little surprised because you were the one that pitched it as the next album to talk about. Now, this is one that I've wanted to talk about for a long time, and I've been hemming and hawing writing about it if we weren't going to talk about it. I guess my question is twofold. What sprung up you kind of bumping this one up on the list? And in the same vein, what was your first impressions when you heard this a couple years back?
Yeah, I guess like first impressions, it didn't really like stand out like huge to me, I guess. Like it was just like, oh, okay, new Vacation record, like kind of play it. But it grew on me over time. And I think it's because it's so relaxing. I would always kind of pop it on and yeah, just kind of presents, you know, a nice soothing reaction out of me. And that's one of the notes I had when I was listening to this. It's like I noticed like a visceral like reaction listening to the opener sometimes where it's like, oh, you could feel the muscles relax. And it's like, ah, this is nice.
It's like an exhale, like,
yes, 100%. Yeah, it very much is. So, yeah, I would say it's not a frequent listen or like on rotation for me, but it is one that when it comes on, it's like, damn, this is a good record. And I also really started to listen to his instrumental solo album Wavelengths as well. And
really? You went back to Wavelengths? Okay.
And I've been actually really enjoying that too. So because of those two reasons, and I was like, yeah, well, let's talk about it. Because we also have, we've talked quite a bit about Vacationer, so I think it's kind of fun to like revisit Kenny's work and see kind of what we think about it and where it's headed. And yeah, I just think it's interesting given especially where he started and where that band is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So remind me to circle back to Wavelengths because I do want to pick your brain on that a little bit. But before that, I do want to touch on like my first takes on the record because this sticks out as a core memory for me, was throwing it on and just getting that immediate slap in the face of nothing but piano, which is a shock, a sonic shock for Vacationer. They never done anything like that before. Every past record, it hasn't been as bold as to let it breathe and establish a sense of space and empty space quite like the intro does. It just immediately sets that tone, and that piano carries throughout. Now, Vacationer is obviously not a stranger to the piano. It's appeared on tracks here and there in the past LPs. Obviously, Paradise Waiting is the first one to spring to mind. But here in particular, the piano really shines. I think I counted at least 5 tracks featured in a predominant way, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if piano appeared in some sort of mutated state on the other tracks that I maybe didn't notice. But it's a very piano-forward LP, and you had touched on it before, it is intimate in a way that no past Vacationer record has been as well. It is very understated and very direct in a way that also caught me completely by surprise. And that's like kind of another thing that sticks out to me from my memories of the first listen was surprise. So surprises in the tone and style this record goes in with that more intimate approach, that more subtle, spacey approach, letting it breathe in a way that no past record of Kenny's of Vacationers has done. And then, of course, surprise and lyrical material. Kenny and team did sort of dip their toes into getting away from more of like the paradise, tropical vacationing subject matter from their, you know, first two LPs in Mindset. But I feel like here it is taken to the nth degree. It is very much about relationships and connections, love, that sort of subject matter. And that's the core of it. So that was kind of another surprise, though I guess hinted at from the direction they're going at with Mindset. And then, of course, surprises in composition. I think more so than in any past LP of Vacationers, there are switchbacks and sudden detours and really surprising embellishments. All of these different things that appear in the tracks that catch me completely by surprise. Like, I think a song is about to end and then some new breath, some new vigor is breathed into it, and it suddenly takes on a different form for the true ending, or there'll be this really beautiful embellishment over top of this track, like, oh, the flute's gonna be just like lightly tap dancing over this entire track and kind of elevating the otherwise more grounded and heavy soundscape that is being established, or, oh, here's a bridge and we're just going into this entirely different direction. He always is playing with the track. So in a way, like, it's not something I can just throw in the background and have it just be the soundtrack to whatever I'm doing, like I did with Gone and Relief. And for the record, Gone, I think, and it might still be, is one of my most spun records. It's insane, really? Because it's easy to just throw on and just groove to whatever you're doing. It just kind of becomes the soundtrack for what you're doing. And this record demands not having that be done. It demands your attention with these surprises and little bumps that kind of turn your attention away. Like, wait a minute, what just happened? What is happening now? Like, what is going on over there? And it catches your attention like that. So, like, all of these different things I'm touching on, I think all kind of merge together to make that really great first impression. And I came away from my first listen with the understanding that this was my new favorite Vacationer record without question, which usually I need to sit with a record for a good long while before I'm able to kind of figure out where my true feelings lie and where I think it falls in the overall discography. I pretty much was on board from first listen. So I'm really excited to kind of dig more into the meat of that, more into the meat of Kenny and his approaches on this and what it means for Vacationer as a whole and where they're going, and kind of how it also has painted a new appreciation and perspective on Kenny and Vacationer's last LPs as well. I have some things that I think we just straight up missed, both in your write-up for Relief and in our previous discussion on, I think it was Mindset, where it was remiss of us to miss some details about the production that I think are going to come to light later in the conversation as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention that, because I was kind of revisiting some of their prior work and listening to this, and specifically in Mindset, I know we talked about this one way back in the day. Companionship is very much a lead into this. Their stylization and their approach of companionship, they start playing with this idea. And I know we discussed in our chat about Mindset how they have evolved as a band. Like you mentioned, they started as, it sort of was escapism, right? And I think it was because Kenny was breaking away from, you know, being pigeonholed into a certain genre that was very physically demanding on his vocals and just kind of tiring. That's what was sort of the motivation behind Vacationers. Hey, I want to do something different that's not going to like destroy my vocals and allow me to do something, you know, kind of less aggressive. And, you know, you can actually hear the vocals. I'm not trying to like compete with the music. It's interesting to see the maturity then of how he's grown up. You're mentioning where they're headed, and we chatted about this during Mindset of Vacation in terms of, hey, we got Vacation in, you know, places and destinations. And we talked about this before, like the commodification of travel as like kind of confounded with your self-worth of like, oh, the more places you've traveled, oh, how worldly you are, and all that. So like, it's sort of that immature kind of young 20s, I want to go explore and find myself and escape, to then, okay, during COVID, you know, the vacation via a mindset, right? Of, and this is, I think, something that you highlighted of like, hey, you can still achieve that escapism. It's how you approach difficult times, and your mindset will dictate essentially, are you downtrodden all the time or are you able to find the light in it? And then what we see now, and I think it's very culturally timely as well, is vacation via love, appreciation, relationships of others, where a lot of people are struggling to find that now because they, you know, culture and society steered very much to the individualistic, you know, vacation via place and location kind of mindset. So it's interesting to see that. And we were talking about how they evolved and the piano being really forward. I really have loved this album because of this. Kenny, in his documentary about this album, said that he listened to a ton of Bill Evans when
Bill Evans, yep.
And I'm like, oh, yes. So I started listening to some more Bill Evans this past week, too, and it definitely shows. And I think the evolution from primarily bass driven and beat driven music to piano, jazz, you mentioned the subtlety, they're giving it space to breathe and sit. And there's some perceived improvisation with the music as well. You're mentioning like, hey, you think it's going to end, and all of a sudden like, whoa, okay, we're over here. Like, if you're not actually sitting and paying attention, you can miss it.
It's very jazz. And in fact, like the last track on the record is just straight jazz.
And I think that's why this album grew on me, is it took me a little bit to pivot to letting go of Vacationer's prior work influencing my opinions on this and just taking this album for what it is. Very interesting to see where they're headed with this, right?
Absolutely. And to go back to what you said about Mindset and COVID, now, even though Mindset was released in 2018, it is kind of funny because looking back now, it feels like it is a COVID era piece, in that like it is finding that safety, that restorative healing that one would get out of a great destination vacation, but from like changing your perspective and going internal and taking care of your own self, getting yourself into the right mindset. It is very COVID forward, I guess, in that sense, which is kind of funny looking back. But you had touched on it. I think we both watched the same documentary that's just front and center, the promo on Vacationer's main page. I do think it is an important statement, kind of Kenny going about what his original intention was on Vacationer was like, and I quote, I wanted to make music that wasn't terribly loud, etc. Wanted to make a conscious shift into making music that wasn't as aggressive. And so that's kind of the philosophy behind the approach to Vacationer music. And in that sense, I feel like Cherish is an arrival. In a sense, it's the like logical destination of that stated goal. And it's funny because it both feels like a conclusion in that sense, like, oh, all of the Vacationer music has kind of been leading to this point. But now also it's kind of a beginning, because now it feels like from here on out, the sky's the limit. And in that sense, I do want to dig into that, because I think it is clear here. And it was clear to me from initial listen, though I wasn't immediately clear why until I kind of actually did my homework in preparation for our conversation here. It was always clear to me from the outset that like Kenny has clearly matured like fully in his growth, and not just as like a songwriter and instrumentalist, which he's always been doing since the beginning of Vacationer and prior, but now he's like fully formed as a producer as well. So he's kind of empowered in a way that he wasn't at the start, to like see a comprehensive creative vision from start to end with him as like the primary driver of it. And to go into that, so this is what kind of shocked me, and going back, it makes sense. And this and what made me kind of dig into that was Kenny mentioning in that documentary that I believe it was something along the lines of, this is the first record that I fully did myself that has lyrics in it. And that caught me by surprise. I'm like, wait a minute, what about Gone and Relief and Mindset? So going back, sure enough, Gone was produced by Matthew Young and Grant Wheeler. Kenny wasn't even involved in the production stage. Kenny did indeed join in, of course, for the like writing credit, but the production of it was Matthew Young and Grant Wheeler. Same with Relief, exact same notes. And that's why Gone and Relief feel like such a cohesive piece, because then in Mindset, there's this wild departure with the producing credit being primarily attributed to Daniel Schlett. And then there's all of these co-producer credits, again, to Grant Wheeler and Matthew Young. They're back again. And a few others, but now notably, Kenny's included for the first time as like kind of a supporting or co-producer along this gaggle of people. And then, of course, in Wavelengths, Kenny takes the full reins of he's the sole writer, he's the sole producer, but now it makes sense why Wavelengths is the way it is, because I think I mentioned on a mindset as well and just in private conversations with you that it always felt like kind of a side project, a side hustle, something that was more of a test almost, and I couldn't articulate or describe or prove why until I'm looking at the actual credits attributed to all these records, and I'm like, this makes sense. This is literally his first time producing a record himself. It was his test bed. It was his experiment into doing that for the first time. And it's so fun now to look now at Cherish and it's like, okay, this is really, truly a new vocational record through and through with Kenny as the sole producer and sole writer. So it is just really like I'm in a weird way, like not to be parasocial, but I am kind of proud to look at Kenny's growth here on paper going from, and not that songwriting credit isn't important, it absolutely is, but like just to see him now having full agency over the full creative process now, presumably going forward from here, that's probably, I would assume, what he's going to be proceeding with. And even if he does collaborate with a producer, I feel like now with the growth he's had, it'll be as equals and not as like this kind of like, oh, I'm going to be here as a co-producer along with a few others, probably supporting more or less the main producer. No. Sky's the limit now. So it's just very interesting to look back and it helps contextualize the old records and now contextualize again what makes Cherish so important, both to Kenny and Vacationer going forward.
I love how you describe it as an arrival. I think that's very apt. And what's interesting is as you're kind of discussing that, the thought occurred to me that I don't think this would have worked if he tried jumping into something like this out the gate with Vacationer. I think the career growth, to your point, dabbling with, you know, mindset then into Wavelengths and getting that experience to have the confidence to tackle something like Cherish. And then also, like I mentioned, with the subject matter as well, pivoting from more individualistic kind of single escapism to more relationship others driven, right? That maturity in the subject matter is interesting to observe as well. So when you're talking about the comprehensive creative vision, I 100% agree, because I noticed lyrical threads where you'd have lyrics in some songs that seemed to be nice carryovers from others that kind of connected everything together in terms of the themes or messages that he was trying to explore. So yeah, it's really interesting. I never thought to look at the credits, the producing credits and all that. Yeah, you could see the progression and the growth. Very cool.
Yeah, and that was on me. I think we probably should have done that back when we listened to Mindset and talked about it, because I think that would have been maybe an interesting thing to talk about at that episode. But, you know, hey, better late than never.
Well, hence kind of why I wanted to chat about this one, is it's fun to have that continuity of talking about an artist through their different work, right? To be able to get this perspective. So,
and going back to that promo that Kenny put up on the band's main website, I guess listening to it and listening to the lyrics the first time I did, I had assumed it was exclusively about like a significant other, a girlfriend or whoever, a spouse, a wife, whatever. And I didn't really stop to consider there might be aspects of platonic love, like familial love there as well. And I think listening to and watching the promo for the album, and then, of course, actually paying attention while I was listening for my homework, turning the LP around and seeing in the very bottom, centered in like the credits area, dedicated to mom. She had passed away in 2021. And that's another thing that kind of, in retrospect, recontextualizes Cherish for me, is that like, oh, okay, this isn't just a significant other love. It is also aspects of familial love, familial Cherish as well. So that, I think, has helped bring some more light and color to this, that just because it's hard for me to read into lyrics beyond what is explicitly written, Amy was always better at that than I think both of us combined, honestly. She's always being missed in these recordings, but I think that helped kind of bridge that gap in my mind of realizing that that was a aspect of this record as well.
And some of the lyrics, I think, can flex either way, where it's not explicitly, oh, this is a romantic, significant other relationship. It's more relationships and love in general, like you mentioned. So that's what's kind of cool, is someone can listen to this album, and while he did dedicate to his mom, that doesn't like immediately like show through, I would argue. So the listener can more or less apply, I think, some of the lyrics to their own, you know, situation, etc.
I mean, that's good songwriting in general. That's kind of the whole thing with art, is you can't really tell people how to feel about it and what to take away from it. You just have to present your piece and let people react to it as they will. And that's kind of the hard part of art, honestly, is kind of having to let go of that as well. But yeah, you're right. Like, you can absolutely walk away with it with these different perspectives. And maybe some of them will, you know, grow more with time. Some of them will fade more with time. But that's kind of the beauty of it.
Yeah, 100%. Can we talk about the album art?
Sure. Initial glance, it looks like a superimposed fire, which I guess it technically is because it's smoke. And there's probably a concept of fire somewhere there that's producing the smoke.
Oh, that's weed. Oh, that's weed.
Yeah. did you see the big plastic clear bag that was passed around in the promo?
Yeah.
Filled to the brim with smoke. And I'm like, oh my God, dude.
Yeah, he likes his weed.
God bless. Yeah.
So I don't know. In this, we're talking about creative connection. You can see very similar stylizations back to Wavelengths as well, where Wavelengths sort of has similar color palette, and it's just pages of either a book or something kind of creatively, you know, positioned such that it looks almost like a rock face when you look from far away. Like a textured rock face that you would find.
Yeah, like slate rock. Yeah.
Yeah, something that you'd find in the Southwest. But you look closer, then you see, no, this is pages of a book, etc. I noticed similar color palettes here where it looks sort of 1960s, 70s tones, sort of sepia.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of, you know, that movie Her kind of had some similar inspiration to this color palette and stylization as well. It also just looks so cozy.
Yeah.
Like, even if you're not a smoker, you can like hand wave this as like incense or whatever. Right.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the sleeve, the inner sleeve where the lyrics of the record are printed as well. In the lower right hand corner, there's a photo of Kenny. And he's just smiling so happily. He's just really content. Just totally chill. Probably high as shit. But it helps solidify that really cozy atmosphere. This is just a nice chill record.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of houses that have places.
You're a fan of houses that have places.
Let
Do
me just
tell Michael.
Well, so okay, so like, for example, up north, the place is the Octagon Room. That's what,
yes,
kind of what I mean by that is
the heart of the home. Yes,
right. Different areas of house where something about, oh, if we're going to talk feng shui or whatever, you know, something clicks in terms of the experience where the room works. It actually becomes a place, I guess, in quotation marks. This looks like a nice, super nice place, sort of a study, a lived in, like, you know, the human place connection of, he has all his stuff there. And it was cool to watch in the documentary, all his equipment there where he could sample vinyl, tweak with it, and in the windows right there. It looked very homey and cozy in his own little like kind of cubby hole in the, I think it looked like a loft or attic.
Yeah, it's like a loft or attic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I can see it helps illustrate or bring perspective into why he said at the end of the doc that what appeals to me is just being up here and making inarguably beautiful music.
Yes.
And you know what? I agree. That just seems like a really nice place to make beautiful stuff.
Yeah, 100%. And modern day architecture just sucks.
Yes.
Hot take.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every apartment is just a giant effing room.
But Michael, it's luxury. It's a luxury apartment.
Oh my God, everything's luxury. So nothing's luxury. So I don't know. That's what kind of drew me to this imagery, is older school architecture where you actually had, I think, better intentionality of place and space. And I mean, Obama Dad's cabin, I think, showed through with that. There's multiple places. You have the loft if you kind of want to be in the room, but also away. You have the Octagon Room where I am so pleased that no one sits around in the living room where you have the giant black rectangle staring you in the face, and that's the focus. Like, the Octagon Room was definitely worth the money. So that's where everyone congregates in the morning, in the afternoons, like between activities, people are getting ready. And yeah, I see that reflected here, and that again, just draws me in. It brings to the intimacy, the coziness that this album's all about.
For sure. It's nice to get that little perspective formalized in the album art because, you know, we've seen the promo now, but it's nice to see it reflected like a snippet of it in the actual album art itself. And it's kind of fun to, I guess, peek in a little bit and be like, oh, I have, that's my record player, the ATLP 120, I think, or 120 LP or whatever the heck it's called. But yep, I have that exact same turntable right over there. And it's kind of fun to see that. It's fun to see that he has a record out that I'm sure was intentionally placed for this photo shoot of environments. And I'm sure it is not an accident that the album art design for this environments LP looks pretty bang on for what the Cherish LP ended up looking like from an artistic direction. So I think there's a very clear line of, hey, this helped inform this in some way, shape, or form. So it is fun to, it's just fun to kind of poke around the art itself and kind of get little insights from
it. Yeah, 100%.
What do you think? Do you want to start covering some of the tracks that jump out to you in specific?
I guess before we jump into that and talk about tracks specifically, we were discussing before the energy of the album. It's more subtle. It lets things breathe. They're sort of jazz inspired. I think there also is a mix and kind of a hat tip to where Vacationer did come from, though, and start from, where I believe, you know, like tracks like Resemblance, Nurture, Mesmerized do still convey a traditional Vacationer driven beat, even though it isn't as poppy or bass driven, I think, as before. They still intermix, I think, their ability to do that. And I have found multiple times listening to this album, me bobbing my head along and feeling the groove of the beat. I found it so cool because it wasn't jarring. It wasn't, oh, all of a sudden we're having a nice jazzy kind of smooth experience and all of a sudden, whoa, like it's, you know, traditional Vacationer rock pop here. But then Entertainer, Breakthrough, Comforter, etc. Those have that dreamy floatiness that we were talking about. And some are almost also psychedelically trippy with how he reverbs the voice and plays with echoes and kind of, yeah, it makes you feel like you're also tripping balls.
It's all part of the experience.
Right, right.
But that is some of the notes that I have on, like, you know, Nurture, it brings to mind Paradise Waiting, and that Paradise Waiting similarly has a repeating piano riff serving as the track's foundation. So this is the closest the album gets to kind of bringing to mind or recalling Relief. And it's also very short, 1:30, There and Gone. But it's just kind of fun to see those parallels brought back. And then, of course, we got, I think you touched on it, Resemblance and Mesmerize. They both feel like they could slip right into Mindset or Wavelengths and be right at home. So there's all of this continuity that is, of course, still there. But it is interesting to see how they fit so well here by stripping them back to their core essence and not leaning so hard into what we would consider to be like rich production or expensive production that you would get at like a formal studio.
Yeah, stuff's not overbaked here. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The dynamic contrast that is provided by letting tracks be bare and then letting them bloom when they need to bloom, because then that makes the quiet flutes that come in feel like they have so much vigor and loudness behind them, despite still being very soft, being very gentle, being very soothing. So you have still a very chill sound, but it's not boring because they have this ebb and flow and ebb and flow, because he masterfully found the balance of letting it be stripped back, which would help whenever things are added in, they feel like they're that much bigger than they actually are in the overall product. So it feels still all like a very quiet, peaceful, cohesive whole.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, leveraging dynamic contrast so you don't have to overproduce to make things feel grand. Right.
Mm-hmm. It's less is more. Less is more.
Yeah, that's such a good observation. 100%. And also what's nice about this, too, we're talking about production. It's not overproduced. I believe in his documentary, too, he said that he left all his vocal issues in there, or vocal like flubs or whatever, where he never like pitch corrects anything. And that brings such a, like a rich texture to it. And this is why I really enjoyed Last Bison's first release. You can't find it on Apple Music, which is a bummer. that is very almost brash and very raw, and it could be a giant turnoff for people, right? Is I believe, what's his name, Ben? I can't remember the lead singer's name.
Yep, it's Ben.
Yeah, Ben's vocals. They can't be grating if you're not prepared for something that unproduced. But I loved it because you felt like you literally were in the folk chamber hall right there with him, which is how his concert experience was. Very intimate and folky and people dancing and stuff like that. I feel very similar draw to what Kenny did here, too, where he, again, he didn't overproduce his vocals. He let the flubs in there. He let little ambient noises. He just let them be in the album, and it made you feel like you actually were there in sort of a jam session a little bit, you know, a jazz exploration session. And I like the quote I pulled from his documentary. It was pretty funny. He's like, real producers gonna see us and be like, ah, fuck this guy.
See, but like, here's the thing, like, what a smart thing to do, because in the absolute objective sense, Kenny probably isn't a fabulous producer. I'm sure if you had like some sort of objective producer test, he'd be okay at best. Just he doesn't have the time, and like what he's able to achieve here is insane with the relatively brief amount of experience he's had doing it in the field. But I think that's where him being just a masterful artist came in, with knowing it would be unwise for me to pretend to be able to produce something that isn't within my skill set. Like, I'm not going to put on this air of my vocals being perfect. I'm not going to put on this air of my producing skills being immaculate. Like, I'm in this 100-foot shielded room bunker recording, and with like no crossover noise, no creaks from the benches. Everything is squeaky clean laboratory. He realizes, like, I can't produce that here in the attic. I probably could auto-tune my vocals, but then it might feel out of place against the, like, you know, real-world effects that seep in through the recording for me doing this in the attic. And all of that, I think it was smart to lean into, no, I'm leaning into the rawness and the realness of what I am producing and what is being played here. And that results in something that it feels intentional because it was, and it feels masterful because of it, because that's a masterstroke in artistic vision of knowing what to overproduce versus when to like kind of let it be.
Yeah, you know? Play your strengths, and it's authentically Kenny. There's no, you know, other stuff showing through, and it, not to say that he doesn't play with the vocals, but he plays with them in a way that helps the, you know, the experience with the reverbs, the echoes.
With the reverbs, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And exactly that mixed with the imperfections of his vocal delivery, I think produces a pretty, like, a pretty trippy experience, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is quite fun.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, Vacationer is still a Vacationer. It's going to be trippy, but this is the kind of trip that I appreciate going on the most.
Well, think about when we're talking about this being... It's a fast trip, though. It's only 35 minutes, which, looking back,
it's so quick.
Whoa, that's a fast album. Especially because I think it all flows together and it's connected in terms of creative vision. When stuff strikes that and it's around that time mark, it flies right by. And I feel similar thoughts about the duration of this to the Carpenters that we just discussed as well.
I am so surprised you brought Carpenters up, because I was literally going to do the same thing about the final track.
Oh, really? Okay, particular. So maybe we jump there.
Getting a message, coming in loud, eager to tell you, figuring how, savoring always, remembering time.
Okay, so, I mean, the last track. So, Heirlooms was originally, and we'll get to it, I'm going to make us go back to it, but Heirlooms was the previous track, so the penultimate track, was so good, I originally assumed listening to it that was the album's closing, the anchor. So I was shocked when, at the end of Heirlooms, I heard just the piano, a stark, lonely piano, come right back in, just like how the first track opens, which again is a good way to kind of bring everything back, make it like the cyclical thing. And what a wild track, because it is just honest to goodness jazz. Which is absolutely insane to hear on a Vacationer record. It's just a radical departure for Kenny and Vacationer, and it makes me so curious now to see like where they're gonna go, because it's like, okay, sky's the limit now. Like, he did a phenomenal jazz track with this, and you had mentioned the Carpenters, so I want to bring it up here. This is something that I think this is Vacationer sometimes. So the Carpenters, closing track on their self-titled, their third LP, which we talked about in the previous episode, is called Sometimes. And suspiciously, it opens with just a piano, nothing else, piano playing for a good long while. And then eventually the vocals come in. And I'm pretty sure for Sometimes in particular, it is just vocals and piano that ever are there. So it's Karen and the piano, and that's how it ends. And Sometimes, the lyrics, if I recall, is about like, sometimes I'm sitting there and I recall and think about just how much the people around me that I love matter to me. And I really should tell them how much I appreciate them and love them. Just such a beautiful, heartfelt sentiment. And that parallels with what Heirlooms is. While it's not strictly one-to-one, Heirlooms, or Here On Out rather, Here On Out also starts with just a piano. And it also is, while not as stripped back as just piano and vocals, it is very light-handed in its production and its instrumentation. And lyrically, Here On Out and the record as a whole, Kenny in the promo had said, and I think it applies to Here On Out in the record, is, if there's anything I want to improve on myself, it's really showing the people that I appreciate how much I appreciate them. And that's kind of the story of this record. What an interesting quote, because that is really the essence of Sometimes and the Carpenters, and also the essence of kind of Here On Out, this like appreciation aspect to it and this like betterment story to it. I just love those parallels between the two records and the two songs.
What's interesting about the parallel between Sometimes and Here On Out is it's different approaches to expression, right? Here On Out, I would argue, is more, we could just say, a traditionally masculine expression, where it's more of, you know, provide and protect, right? Where we have someone you can count on, right? It's the sort of the thematic here, where Sometimes is more that vocal expression of love. And, you know, there is that kind of that trope, you could say, of, you know, women want to hear versus, you know, men tend to be more action driven.
Yes.
So it's interesting to see the duality there, that the very similar, you know, musical approaches. And I love how you highlighted the bookend approach at the first and last track, mimicking very similar approaches. That didn't click for me, and you're absolutely right. And it makes this so much more, I'm going to appreciate this album so much more having this discussion because for all these little tidbits. But yeah, that's what stands out to me, I guess, in terms of the connection. It's a good parallel you drew. Is I was more thinking of it just purely from a duration and how the album made me feel. It's like longing for more when it's done and not overstaying its welcome. And I like the connection you bring of, hey, Here On Out and Sometimes very much sticking the landing. It's kind of cool to see the, you know, the duality and how both play with very similar themes through a, you know, different approach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there anything else you wanted to say on Here On Out? Otherwise, I was hoping to jump to Entertainer.
Yeah, let's jump to Entertainer.
So I recall back in 2020, I was still on Twitter at the time, and I was following Kenny, and one of the tweets that he tweeted was, quote, writing lyrics for new songs, ... And it is a very badly recorded snippet of the biopic Love and Mercy on Brian Wilson. And it's a scene where, and I forget the actor's name, but he did a phenomenal job in the film. I'll include it in the show notes because I feel bad for not remembering his name. But he does a phenomenal job, and he's going on a rant towards the character on screen that is representing Mike Love. And he's going like, I can't go back in time. We're not surfers. We never have been. And real surfers don't dig our music anyway. Okay, I can't write about summer and fun and summer and summer and fun and cars. I have different stuff inside me. I gotta get it out. And I remember back in 2020, I'm like, what an interesting tweet to tweet. Because we had very similar observations with the lyrical material of Mindset about it being kind of already, even back then, 2 years before this tweet, some very conscientious pivots away from the party boy vacationing tropical indie pop tracks that were present in Gone and Relief. And I remember tucking this away in the back of my mind. I'm like, he is going to do something very different with the next record, like very different for Vacationer. And I can't wait to see what this ends up being. And sure enough, this whole record, I mean, we've already kind of talked at length about the lyrical content of the record. And it's very clear that that was indeed what we ended up getting. But I think it pertains to Entertainer explicitly because in some ways, this track brings to mind the same role in this record as Leaving LA did in Father John Misty's Pure Comedy, where to me anyway, to a listener, it feels as if the mask is off and we're getting like an unadulterated stream of consciousness from the artist. So in Pure Comedy, we have Father John Misty mask coming off and he's just kind of talking with the listener. And here I feel a similar thing happening with Kenny, where he's just talking about kind of the experience of being done with these entertaining, touring, poppy, tropical tracks and wanting to like really write stuff that matters to him and his partner and all of that. Like, I just want to chase my good ideas and see them through for you. And I'm done with all of this other stuff. So it feels to me like a direct conclusion of that original tweet from all those years back now at this point.
Yeah. That's so interesting you mentioned that, because literally the note I typed on the song when I was making eggs was the reverb on the guitar has a tinge of that West Coast 60s surfer vibe, where it very much sounds like The Ventures or some of the Beach Boys or the Explorers Club. So it's so interesting you mentioned that. Maybe that's intentional, you know? So it's interesting you mentioned like the lyrics here. Good ideas, I will chase them all for you. This is where it harkens to, again, the maturity change, I believe. The why has changed here. The motivation is no longer internal, maybe for, say, to write a killer album, make it successful, etc. Or doing the album for someone else. For him, the motivation was his mother. But generally, when we're talking about art interpretation, this applies as well to relationships in general, where your why changes when you get married, have kids, etc. You pursue excellence not for yourself, but for them. And this is where I see some of the lyrical connections and the common thread that we've been talking about, too. The strength and security of relationship to chase those ideas also helps. Like, it provides you the backdrop, more or less, the security blanket per se, and hence the connection to Comforter, where the Comforter lyrics here, you always make it easier for anything I want to happen in life. Right. There's that continuity of lyrics here. And it's interesting too, because when I was listening to the lyrics, I know I'm kind of jumping around here, but because I think Comforter, Entertainer, I know some connections, is that lyric, you always make it easier for anything I want to happen in life. I remember as a young lad talking of dad about, it just kind of blew my mind of like, oh my gosh, you're going through med school and residency. You also were getting married. Your mom had no money. I'm like, holy fuck, how'd you pull this off? It was very interesting to me. It never really clicked that dad was saying, okay, it was actually easier to do it with mom. Now, it was hard for me to understand, and that could have just been my own immaturity and, the cultural zeitgeist at the time, right? Of, be strong individual, do it all on your own, right? It's what's so cool to see about Kenny mentioning with the Comforter lyrics and Entertainer is the strength and I think confidence that probably provided him to chase this. And we've heard that narrative, oh, marriage and relationships are hard. And Comforter is just like a nice antidote to that. And I read, I know I've talked about these folks before on this podcast, the Brett and Kate McKay from Art of Manliness.
Yes, you have.
Well, they wrote like a nice article about 20 lessons from 20 years of marriage. That was kind of a nice summation of a bunch of different stuff that also connects to what Kenny's trying to communicate here, where they were like, we don't think it's hard. We think it's darn easy. It's more about selection. And they talked about the projection of people who have difficulties or things are tough, projection to the institution or, relationships as a whole, rather than that projection that happens. And it's cool to see these antidotes to that. This whole album, you could argue, I guess, is an antidote to that. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to see, again, that lyrical connection, right, between the Comforter, Entertainer, etc.
Yeah, a good call out on the connection between Comforter and Entertainer. And I'm sure that it wasn't an accident that they're both right next to each other, Entertainer right after Comforter, with that kind of through line more clearly pointed out to me. It makes sense. And to kind of continue my thoughts on Entertainer, because I know we've been jumping around, but I do want to touch on it, that, again, we got that, like, surprise, more surprises. Near the end of the track, it didn't need this. Well, I would argue it does, because it made it so much better that it's there, but suddenly the music warps and kind of, like, slides, and instead of it being this very airy, heady, for lack of a better word, stoner-esque beat, we have now this very tight percussion groove, and it, to me, like, it helps make it one of the best tracks on the record, not just lyrically, but kind of helps elevate instrumentally the track as a whole. And it kind of joins among my favorites of, like, the opening and the anchors. I think that that musical shift, it helps recontextualize the rest of the song up until that point as, like, not yet being fully formed. Like, the song itself was on, but just idling. And now all of a sudden the engine's going and we're cruising. And the song lyrics also kind of reflect that too, like, or rather the instrumentation as well kind of reflects that, where we have this tropical inspired percussion come back at the very end. And to me is one of the closest nods to kind of like OG Vacationer, like Gone in Relief, that we see on the record. Because there, as far as I'm aware of, like, we don't really have any percussion quite like the tropical flourishes we get at the very end here anywhere else on the record. And I think that was intentional, because it feels as if Kenny is declaring, but through the actual instruments this time, like, I'm done with that. It makes it feel more meaningful, because it kind of feels like he's looking back one last time, and we got that, like, kind of tropical flourish at the very end, buttoning up this profound declaration of, I'm moving forward with music that matters to me, because I want to explore this within every inch for you. So I just wanted to touch on that I thought that was a very interesting artistic choice as, like, a send-off to that era.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't catch the percussive connection at the end. The guitar at the beginning caught my ear. So that's interesting. I'll have to listen back to that.
So I do want to talk about heirlooms. I'm not going to let us go on without finally talking about heirlooms.
I do remember a distinct text from you about you losing your ever-loving mind when he breaks out the fuzz bass in the end of heirlooms.
It did kind of break me. So let me set the scene on this. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous track with Kenny's mission statement of just wanting to create undeniably beautiful music. It's just so on display here. It's got this wistful synth and this haunting siren-like wail going on as well over top. It feels like I'm laying down in grass and just staring sleepily at clouds drifting by. It is just such a carefree comfort. And it, in a weird way, the production on that first half of the track to me is a very strong callback to my favorite track on Gone, which is Farther. While on Farther, it's more of an aggressive arrangement than here. They both live in that same heady sense of space. I feel like there is a through line here, and I don't know if it's intentional. I don't know if it's me reading too much into it, but I do feel like this is Kenny's personal own take now on that Farther track from Gone, where he, at least the first half of Heirlooms, this is my take on this sort of vibe, this sort of thought now. And I think it's just beautiful to hear. I think he does a fabulous job. This is probably one of the places that I think his production skills are on best display, but not just this first half, but the rest of the track as well. And we'll get to that. Because surprise, suddenly, like, a stuttering percussion comes out of nowhere. And again, like, it almost didn't need it, but it's so much better for it. And then the piano pops in, and then boom, we got, like, this fuzz bass coming in with this just almost funk energy.
Yeah.
And the track has entirely changed as a result. Like, the entire mood shifted. It's like the lights have all of a sudden gone color, and it is a pure distilled jam from that point on. And what I love about this, because it feels like, to my ears, it's Kenny in complete artistic flow for the first time in recorded format in vacationer. He is just firing on all cylinders in full flow as writer, producer, player for the first time. And the fact that it's such a soaring, groovy, almost funky bop, still very chill, still very comforting. It feels like he's just fully dancing now for the first time as like a fully formed writer, producer, player, artist. It's so great to see. It's so great to hear. Like both in the meta sense of like, it's great to see him kind of achieve this. I don't want to say enlightenment, but it feels that way on this record. And then of course, in the song itself, it's just really cool to have, oh, now we're doing like a groovy thing and it feels like it came out of nowhere. What fun. It works on both levels. So this track to me is just an absolute achievement. It was the reason that when I ended this record, I'm like, nope, this is my favorite vacationer record without question. Just an absolute achievement.
Yeah, it is very trippy that the synth, how he transitions to that fuzz bass at the end of Heirlooms, that almost it's not backstep, but
I couldn't tell you.
It's, I don't know what they call that effect that he does. It kind of makes you feel like you're going forward, then backwards a little bit. Yeah, that's the fuzz bass makes its appearance in other areas of this album, if I recall correctly. But this album's full of surprises, and I think this is a great example of surprises when he breaks it out and he builds to just jamming that you don't see coming at the start of this track.
So that's kind of all of the notes I really wanted to touch on individual tracks. Is there any, I know we kind of breezed through these. Is there any in particular you wanted to touch on?
I think dialogue speaks to the themes when he's dedicating it to his mother, right? Essentially, this is getting at the internalized empathy that, you know, the mother-child relationship is, you know, it's very paramount in that, particularly at the early stages where people say, like, it's easier for, you know, husbands to ignore a crying baby at night, but mothers have a really tough time. Again, he has it through maybe the maternal lens, but the lyrics are general, where I think good relationships also reach into this telepathic connection, right? Where you can, you know, a look across the room can communicate a hell of a lot if people are in tune with each other. So it's cool to see that it get that connection with entertainer, dialogue, comforter. The lyrical connection about the subject matter is very fun here. That's I'm trying to think. I think that's the only other like song specific note I had.
So I do want to add to your note on dialogue. I wish I could find, there was like a YouTube short or a TikTok or something along those lines, which is poking fun at that about like, oh, when you first meet your friend and it's like, you know, both people talking at exactly the same time. And then the other one is them like, oh, here's you with your best friend, and it's both of you just like sitting around not talking to each other. But like, there is something to that where it's just there is that comfort in existence around each other that can really only be established by like a close, long-lived friendship or a significant other or a family member that is kind of expressed in dialogue, which I thought was, you're right. It's kind of neat to see formalized in song like this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Also, what the heck is he doing at the start of Mesmerized? I love the start of that song.
Oh, yeah. There's some sort of synth riff just on repeat.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. It's got to be some sort of electric piano synth situation.
Yeah, I don't know why it has an oriental like sound to it.
It does. No, it absolutely does.
I don't know what it is. I was trying to pinpoint like why my brain was going oriental there, but
I think it's because it's minor notes, like it's in a minor key. If we're looking at a piano, I think it's mostly black keys.
Yes.
And that tends to, you know, typical Western ears come across as a very like oriental style or generically oriental style track. And I think there's like foundations in that. Now, here's where I'm talking out my something about the like literal instruments, like vintage instruments from back in the day where it was just, you know, minor notes, predominantly minor notes, which is why that association kind of, you know, continued through to modern day. But yeah, no, you're right. It's definitely present there.
Oh, interesting. Cool.
Yeah, I guess it's time to kind of do closing statements and final thoughts. I kind of left everything on the table. I'm just very pleased that I got to kind of talk through this with you, to kind of formalize my thoughts and educate myself more on why I feel the way I feel about this record. And I feel like I'm coming away with a new appreciation that I wouldn't have had otherwise, just of my own volition. I think I mentioned it on Mindset, and I'm going to repeat it as well. Like, I'm a Kenny stan for life. Like, whatever music he makes from here on out, I'm at the very least going to buy and listen once.
Yes.
Like, at the very least, even if he starts getting in music that I don't really care for or it's not to my taste, like, he has earned the benefit of the doubt for at least supporting his creative journey in whatever way I can for as long as he feels he wants to do it, because I think this is a triumph of a record in many ways. And I can't wait for what's next.
Yeah, likewise. I don't have much else to say, but looking forward to where he's headed. If it's continuing this thread of more, you know, freeform jazz exploration, I'm super excited. So,
all right. Well, that pretty much covers it. Well, thank you, Michael, for taking time to talk through this with me. I really appreciated getting to chat with you. I always like hearing your insights, and I think I learned more about this record and you from talking through it.
Oh, 100%. I agree. This one, it was, I don't have as much of a musical ear, so this one, I didn't have a lot to say on the songs by song, so I was taking notes while you were talking about what you've noticed about the different songs. So I'm excited to go back and re-listen to some of their old records and make the connections and, you know, try to circle back to some of the things that you pointed out about some of the tracks. So yeah, looking forward to that. Should be good fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I like about this, is it's a way to formalize us talking about music. And sometimes I would argue, like for the Carpenters, I learned and got more of an appreciation from the record from hearing your thoughts on it. Cause I think inarguably you came more prepared and more excited to talk about specific aspects about that record than I did. Not that I didn't love the record, I did, but you just had more profound things to say about it. So I came away with new experiences and new thoughts. And I think maybe here was an inverse of that. And that's what it's fun. It's fun to do that.
Oh, 100%. 100% agree.
Yeah. And well, thank you, listener, for sticking around and listening to us banter back and forth about this as well. We referenced a whole bunch of quotes and other things. So if you wanted to dig more into anything we maybe mentioned off the cuff, chances are it's documented and linked in the show notes, and you can find the show notes, and most podcast players have a way to display the show notes. But even if yours doesn't, or if you have trouble finding it, not to worry. The show notes are also available on our website. That's badmusichurts.com. That's Hurts Like the Car Rental Company, or Hurts Like It Hurts Me. They both work. They both take you to the same place. So don't worry about the spelling. And you'll find for the post for this episode all of the juicy links and maybe even some images. So go on and give it a look. You'll have a good time. But yes, thank you for listening, and we'll hope to catch you next time. Keep that record spinning and take care.
I wanna be someone you can always count on.
Almost I can speak.
Telepathic?
Yes, telepathic. Holy f-
Usually these roles are reversed.
Yeah, telepathic.
And I'm basking in the glory.
Yeah, telepathic.